WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. This morning, it's a special Arctic edition. I believe Logan Airport was reporting 15 degrees. That was what NOAA had indicated. My digital thermometer where I live had a temperature at 12. My cell phone indicated 11. But the mercury thermometer up by my old garden read 8. I guess the glass is half full with Fahrenheit because the Celsius equivalents would sure as heck be a lot colder. Going to go and play. I had technical difficulties on last week's show, so I'm going to play Britt Ponsett's Christmas Carol. The original air date of that was 20th December 1953. That would have been 54 years before I re-aired it last week on the Grand Hour. Again, it stars James Stewart. I'm going to follow this one up with another six-shooter, double billing of six-shooter this morning. One of my listeners actually is kind of fond of the six-shooter. So we're going to go ahead and pick up where I made a mistake last week and finish off where I didn't quite play out the second one.
As the six shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the six shooter. The NBC WMFO. Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
There was a nip in the air, not a freezing, biting, angry nip, but a sort of tingle that made the morning stars shimmer and swung them out of their orbits a little closer to the Earth. Oh, it was a winter nip, all right, but not a hard winter. Not a winter when the cattle would come down from the high places, poking their noses into the ice-encrusted ground. It was a mild winter nip. Mild enough so that the breath of the boy on the Pinto turned only a faint gray as he rode toward the campfire where the man was sitting.
Howdy.
Hello, mister. I see your fire. I thought maybe you wouldn't mind if I gave my pony a chance to warm up.
Sure. Make yourself home.
Easy, Black. You heading for Thompson's Corners, mister?
That's right.
I just came from there.
Oh, well, you must have been riding all night.
Just about. You see, I'm running away from home.
Oh, that's so. Ah. Seems kind of a funny thing you'd pick this time of year to run away. So close to Christmas, I mean.
I hate Christmas.
Oh?
It's just for kids, anyhow.
Well...
I heard Aunt Lily say so. Christmas is for children. That's what she said. Johnny's old enough to do without all that fuss and nonsense. I heard her tell Mr. Franklin that.
Oh, you don't live with your folks, huh, Johnny?
No, sir. He died about 8 months ago.
Oh, I see.
Christmas was all right when I was with them. Of course, I was a lot younger then.
Oh, yes.
It just beats me the way folks take Christmas so serious.
Well, I don't know.
Is it getting presents made any difference? As if I really cared about that knife.
Well, is that what you wanted, a pocket knife?
I don't want a knife. I don't want anything. I just wish there wasn't any Christmas, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess you aren't the first person to feel that way. You know, it seems to me... Seems to me I remember reading a story once about a fellow felt the same way about Christmas you do. Just didn't have any use for it.
What happened to you?
Well, I doubt if I can call it to mind after all this time, but as I recollect... Now, mind you, this may not be word for word, but as I recollect, the man that it was about, the one that hated Christmas, that is, well, he was a real skinflint, he was. He just as stingy as they come. His name was, Eben, something like that.
Eben?
Eben, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was it. Well, being so tight-fisted, this fellow Eben, he got to be the richest man in the whole territory.
He owned a ranch?
Oh, sure. Had four of them. Four ranches and store buildings and farms and maybe a bank or two.
He was rich. I bet he had a mighty fine ranch house.
No, he didn't have a ranch house. Evan wasn't the sort to spend money on a ranch house unless there was profit in it. He just lived alone in town, had himself a steady room at the hotel. Well, anyway, one night while Evan was sitting in his room having supper, Christmas Eve it was, well, on this particular Christmas Eve, his only kin, a nephew, lived in the same town. He stopped by the hotel.
To wish you a Merry Christmas, Uncle, and invite you to our place for dinner tomorrow.
Christmas, fiddlesticks. Powder all. I suppose you'll be closing up your livery stable for the occasion.
Why, sure, Uncle Eb.
And just how are the horses know it's Christmas? Answer me that.
Well, if they don't know it, we will. Can I tell Sally to expect you at 3?
You can expect me all you like, but I ain't coming. Not at 3 or any other time. Oh, if you're making so much money, you can afford to be giving parties. Maybe I ought to think about raising the rents on the livery stable.
Well, now, Uncle Eb.
Go on, get out of here before I lose my temper. All this nonsense about Christmas. Fiddlesticks. Hold.
Well, after that, Johnny, the nephew didn't stick around there. He got out of Evan's hotel room at a regular gallop. It wasn't very long before Evan had another visitor. He's a young fella, tall, lanky. Not very good at speaking. He just plain ordinary cowpoke. He was the foreman of the S&M ranch.
Oh, well, it took you long enough to get here. Where have you been? Selling off some of my herd without telling me about it?
No, sir. That day you rode by, I was out in the range hunting strays.
And a good thing I decided to check up on you, too. What's that cabin doing over by Holly Creek? And who are those people staying here?
They're my family. I built the shack for them myself.
I'm not going to have a bunch of nesters in my property. Tear it down.
But one of my boys has been sick. I can't afford
that
to rent
it.
That
ain't my concern. It's up to you to keep your family and what you earn. So see that you get rid of that shack tomorrow.
But tomorrow's Christmas.
Oh, well. Then you'll have plenty of free time to tear it down. I'll be out the day after to make sure you've done it. Good night.
Well, it wasn't much use in arguing. Quorum knew that. So he put on his hat and shuffled out. Now Evan was alone again. At least he thought he was alone. The clock on the mantel started striking 8, and that's when it's time for him to turn in. So he put on his flannel nightshirt and reached for the kerosene lamp to set it on the stool beside the bed, and right about then, the strangest thing happened.
What in tarnation?
Johnny, old Eben
saw a man's face looking right at him from inside that lamp. Eyes and hair and nose and mouth, whiskers, all just as plain as day.
Jake!
It was old Jake, Evan's partner. There wasn't any mistake about it at all. It was Jake right to a T. Well, Evan sure didn't like the idea of having Jake right in the same room with him. You see, Jake had been dead for over 7 years. Not that Evan really believed in ghosts or haunts or anything like that. He told himself he'd just imagining all this.
I gotta get over myself.
He put out his hand to turn down the wick, but all of a sudden his fingers started trembling. There was Jake again, across the room this time, standing right by the bureau.
No!
And when the lamp slipped out of Evan's hand, the room didn't get dark at all. Jake seemed to be surrounded by a splotch of bright yellow light, and he was wearing the same boots and breeches and leather jacket that he'd had on 7 years ago, the day he died. But as Jake came closer, Evan could see that he was wearing something else. A small leather saddle strapped across his back, and hanging down from it were two saddlebags stuffed so full of gold nuggets and mortgage papers and land grants that Jake could hardly drag him across the floor.
You recognize me, Evan?
Oh, sure, Jake. Why, sure, I'd never forget you, but what are you doing here? And why are you wearing that getup?
Always thinking about land and money. Always scheming and conniving. That's why I wear it. And that's why I've come to warn you, Evan. The saddle you're fixing up for yourself is even heavier than mine.
But I don't know what you mean, Jake. I ain't done no wrong. I ain't never done folks no wrong.
Have you ever done them any good? Any good at all?
Oh, why, sure. I've worked hard. I've saved my money. I ain't been a burden on anybody. Why, you should see our ranches, Jake. Oh, the way I've built them up.
I have seen them many times. And I've seen a lot more than that, too. That's my punishment. To spend eternity traveling around, seeing mankind with its trials and tribulations, with its joys and hopes.
Is that so terrible?
Oh, Evan, to watch them and not be able to help them. You'll find out how terrible it is. You'll find out.
Well, there must be some way of avoiding this. You always were my friend. Jake, tell me what to do.
Evan, you've got to find out for yourself.
But how?
Tonight, at 1 o'clock, you'll be haunted by a ghost.
Another ghost?
Pay him heed, Evan. Pay him some heed.
Wait, Jake. Don't leave me without it. Jake.
The yellow light sort of faded away and the ghost was gone. It was just like he hadn't even been there. And then something caught the corner of Evan's eye. A little glimmer on the floor. And he bent over to pick it up.
Yes, it is. A gold nugget. Now, where on earth did he...
And then he remembered. Those saddlebags of Jake's, they'd been filled clear to the brim with gold nuggets.
We're interrupted.
I don't know what they have to say. It makes no difference anyway. Whatever it is, I'm against it. No matter what it is or who commenced it, I'm against it. Your proposition may be good, but let's have one thing understood. Whatever it is, I'm against it. And even when you've changed it or condensed it, I'm against it. I'm opposed to it. On general principles, I'm opposed to it.
He's opposed to it. In fact, indeed, he's opposed to it.
For months before my son was born, I used to yell from night till morn, whatever it is, I'm against it. And I've kept yelling since I first commenced it. I'm against it.
Then Jake's ghost really had been there, huh, mister?
Yeah, I just wasn't any doubt about it, Johnny.
What happened then? Did the other stick turn up? The one Jake said was coming to see Evan?
Oh, sure, Johnny, sure, yeah. He was right on time, too. Evan was lying in bed, wide awake, of course. He hadn't been able to do much sleep, and he's too scared, you know. It was kind of peculiar. Evan was half scared the ghost would come and half scared he wouldn't, you see. But before the sound of the clock had died away, there he was. He's sitting in Evan's rocking chair like he'd been there all night long. And this ghost was a young fella, oh, maybe 18, 19, all dooted up the way young bucks like to dress, you know, fancy chaps and checkered shirt and red bandana tied around his neck.
Howdy, Evan. Reckon you've been expecting.
Yeah, well, I guess so.
You ready to take a little trip?
Where to?
Back. Way back through the years.
Oh, but how can I go with you?
It's real easy. You see, I'm the ghost of Christmas past. Your past, Evan. Let's shove off.
Well, the next thing Evan knew, he and that ghost were standing out on a snow-covered prairie. There was a circle of covered wagons in front of them, and the people from the wagons were gathered together and listening to a tall, white-bearded man.
Behold, I bring you good
he was reading the Bible.
Great joy, which will be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And there shall be a sign unto
and
you. Find
the ghost turned and pointed to a boy sitting away from the others on the tailboard of one of the wagons. Small boy, oh, about 10 years old, with hollowed cheeks and his eyes all red from crying.
Oh no.
It was Evan himself on a Christmas day a long, long time ago. Not a very happy Christmas either. It was only a week since the oxen had stampeded and his ma had been killed when she fell from the wagon. His pa had died with an Apache arrow in his chest.
Now, I don't want to look at him anymore. Can't you show me another Christmas?
Well, it was no sooner said than done. Now Evan and the ghost were in a bunkhouse. And Evan saw himself again. Oh, he's 10 years older than the boy on the prairie, but he was lying on a blanket, staring up in the ceiling. And then his pal, Jay, came running in, all out of breath.
Come on, Ed. Get a clean shirt on. We got us an invite to a party.
Huh?
Yeah, the boss is throwing a big shindig. He says he'll fire us if we don't show up.
Evan couldn't help remembering that party. Oh, the roast beef and the baked ham and square dancing and the pretty girls in their calico. He couldn't help saying out loud to the ghost.
Oh, dear. How I wish I...
What was that, Evan?
Nothing, Mr. Spirit. Nothing. I was just remembering how I treated my foreman today. That's all.
After that, the ghost took Evan to three or four more of his old Christmases. And none of them were very happy. Especially that Christmas when the young school marm, sitting on the horsehair sofa, had unwrapped the tiny box Evan gave her and then handed it back to him.
It's a lovely ring, Evan, but I can't wear it.
Well, you're not courting somebody else.
No, Evan, but you are. You're courting something else.
Bill.
Land and money, cattle, profits. They mean more to you than I ever would. I'm sorry.
Mr. Ghost, no more of the past. Please, I've seen enough. A man wants to forget.
Sure, Evan, whatever you say.
And before Evan could blink his eyes, he was right back in the hotel room. But once he got there, he blinked real hard because all of a sudden the ghost was becoming a different person. He was getting fatter and his stomach popped out 2 or 3 inches and a few wrinkles creased his cheeks and finally his chaps turned into a shiny blue serge suit with a heavy gold chain dangling across the vest.
Hey, well, what's happened to you? Why are you so different now?
You seem to be getting tired of the past, so I thought we might take a gander at the present, if you've got no objection.
Well, the hotel room just melted away and Evan was looking at that cabin his foreman had built on Holly Creek. Well, that cabin sure was crowded. Oh, it must have been five or six children, all helping their mother get the Christmas dinner, all laughing and talking, busy as summer coals. But when their father came in, he had a long face and a tired mouth, and his wife looked up and wanted to know what was troubling him.
Oh, I was thinking about old Evan.
That's not a very pleasant thought for Christmas, Bob. By the way, what did you want me to yesterday? Was it about this cabin?
Yeah. Oh, no, of course not. Well, let's get on with dinner. Sit down, everybody. Now, where's my Jim, huh? Well, I guess we're just going to have to eat.
And Bob looked all around the room. He was pretending he didn't see the little fellow in the corner. The boy with an iron brace on his leg and a wooden crutch propped up against the wall. But little Tammy wasn't going to be ignored.
Here I am.
So, Bob picked him up and carried him over to the table.
God bless this food, this house, and us and our friends. Even old Evan. Amen.
The family found that part about Evan a little hard to swallow, but they finally managed, and Tim was the last one to chime in.
God bless us, everyone.
Evan didn't want to watch what was going on in that cabin any longer, but the next place the ghost showed him wasn't much easier on him. There was a big party going on at his nephew's house back in the livery stable. And one of the ladies was blindfolded, you see, and she was trying to pin the tail onto a donkey. But there was something peculiar about this donkey, about the way it was drawn. It looked more like a person than an animal. Well, Evan recognized who it was supposed to be right off.
You see, folks, I invited Uncle Evan to be with us, but he turned me down flat. So I figured we'd have him here in spirit, if not in the flesh.
Right back in the hotel room again. That's where Evan found himself.
Spirit, you showed me the past and the present. What's left to see?
The future, Evan. The future.
And that's how Evan came to see a Christmas of the future. A cold, brittle Christmas. And there are two men standing on a street corner and their coat collars turned up so to keep out the snow.
Oh, he's dead, all right. Dead as a doornail. Sure is a Christmas present I never expected. At least whoever handles his property won't be as hard to deal with as he was. Wonder if they'll bother giving him a funeral.
And in a frame house over on the side street in the edge of town, a woman was speaking to her husband.
Funny. To me, he's been dead for years. Well, I haven't even thought of him since I don't know when. And yet, you know, once I was real fond of him. Funny, isn't it?
Ghost! Who are they talking about? Those men on the street. That woman I used to know. Who is it that's dead? Tell me.
And the ghost slowly turned and stretched out a long, thin, bony finger. And there, right at the end of that finger, was a tombstone, all covered with weeds. Evan could barely make out the name that was carved on it.
Ebenezer Scrooge. No. What's this? Where am I?
Where you know I? What? He was right in his own bed, in his own nightshirt, and the sun was streaming through the frosted windows. But Evan didn't stay there very long, not for very long. He got into his boots and trousers as fast as he could, and he dashed down the stairs, out into the street. Well, you see, the stores being closed gave Evan quite a problem. Well, he just have to make Fuzzy Wagner open the butcher shop up, that's all. Of course, Fuzzy didn't have much choice, seeing as how the shop was located in one of Evan's buildings. And when Evan told him what he wanted, a turkey and a ham, well...
No. I'd better make it two hams and send them out to the cabin on the S&M ranch. And they're not to know that I ordered them. You understand, Fuzzy? Here's the money and a little extra for your trouble.
Well, before Fuzzy could get his jaw shut up again, Evan was on his way, and he headed right straight out to his nephew's house. And Evan was the life of the party, too. Well, the way he carried on, he's laughing and making jokes and telling stories on himself, and he insisted that they use that donkey with his face on it when they played games, you know.
Yes, because that's what I've been all these years, a real four-footed, long-eared donkey.
And the next morning, though, that's what Evan enjoyed the most. He was up bright and early and hitched the team to the buckboard and drove out to the S&M, hurrying the horses all the way.
Come on, Bess. Come on, Martha. Step a little lively.
If he could just get out there before his foreman started tearing down that cabin.
Whoa, whoa, Martha. Whoa, whoa. Yeah. Well, Robert?
Yes, sir?
I see you ain't carried out my orders.
It was Christmas. I just couldn't tell him. I'll do it today.
Oh, this is the last straw. I'm not putting up with your shenanigans any longer, young fella.
Oh, but please.
That cabin's coming down and no buts about it. And then... we're building a new ranch house in this place. Big enough for you and your whole family.
What?
Oh, yes. I'm also doubling your wages as of last week. Merry Christmas, Bob. Even if I am a day late. No, not a day. More like half a lifetime. But Merry Christmas anyway. And as your son says, God bless us. Everyone.
Well, that's the way things worked out, Johnny, more or less.
That's a fine story, Mr. Real fine. I reckon I know why you told it to me.
How's that?
So that I'd understand about Christmas and how important it is to do for other people instead of just thinking about yourself.
Well, no. I didn't have that in mind, especially. The story just happened to come into my head, that's all.
Maybe if I could give Aunt Nellie something, a present, maybe. Oh, shucks, what could I give her? I don't have no money.
Well, of course, there are lots of things don't cost a penny. Not a single red cent, you know.
Hmm?
Well, now, you... Let's see. Take that little spruce over there. I'd be real easy to cut that down. With a little fixing, maybe a few doodads from around the house. I'll bet you can make a Jim Dandy Christmas tree out of that.
I suppose so, but... What good's a tree without something to put under it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean. Johnny... you don't happen to know Jim Bender, do you? In Thompson Corner and his three daughters?
He's only got two, Mr. Sarah and Emily.
Oh, that's all. That's all. I was spending Christmas with them. It looks like I'm carrying an extra present. It's a real pretty little red bonnet with feathers on it.
I couldn't take it, Mr.
Oh, no. I wasn't thinking of giving it to you, Johnny. I was sort of hoping that you'd show me the trail from here on in. Of course, it would mean you're turning around going back home, but if I was to cause you changing your plans, I'd feel obligated to pay you back some way, you know.
Well,
it would be only fair. Trouble is, I haven't got much money, so if you wouldn't mind accepting the bonnet instead, you'd be doing me a real favor, Johnny.
There's Aunt Nellie out in the yard. Oh, she looks madder than a wet hen.
Well, there is a resemblance. I'll have to admit that.
Where in tarnation have you been, John Carville? I've been looking high and low for you since dawn.
Well, I just went for a little ride, Aunt Nellie, to get us a Christmas tree, see?
Christmas tree? Fiddlesticks.
This gentleman won't cut it down. I'll just take it inside. Be right back, mister.
If we had any use for a Christmas tree... I suppose he's figuring there'll be a whole lot of presents under it.
No, I don't think so. But just between you and me, I got a hunch there'll be at least one present waiting for somebody.
What are you talking about?
Oh, no, it wouldn't be fair for me to speak out before Christmas. You know that.
You don't mean he's got something for me?
No. You must get too curious so early.
But I thought he didn't like me. I thought he just hated having to live here with
with an old maid. I guess I just don't know nothing about kids. Nothing at all. I don't deserve to get...
Well, I think I'd better get moving along. Say goodbye to Johnny for him, will you? And I wonder if you'd give this to him.
Hmm?
Here, tell him the little blade on it's kind of dull, but...
A pocket knife?
Yeah.
Now, how did you know?
So long, man.
Oh, God bless you, mister. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
It's Christmas Carol. As always, wholesome programming. James Stewart stars as Britt Ponsett. There were some other notable actors in that one. Howard McNair played Eben Scrooge. He was known as he was Floyd the Barber on the Andy Griffith Show. Johnny's Aunt Millie is played by Eleanor Audley. She had a couple of roles on the Beverly Hillbillies and Green Acres. Another interesting note, little Johnny is played by a 26-year-old Dick Beals. I guess he had some role about Alka-Seltzer. I don't know anything about that, to tell you the truth. I read that along the way. And again, that was aired on the 20th of December, 1953. My phone is indicating that it's 12 degrees outside. The studio here does not have a thermometer, unfortunately. So, I don't know what it truly is outside. WMFO 91.5 FM WMFO.org Studios. The next six shooter is Cora Plummer Quincy. I started this last week, but I cut it off because I was having the technical difficulties. We'll resume this one. Its original air date was the 27th of December, 1953.
Saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the six-shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman, who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
The rain sure was coming down that afternoon in Petersville. It had started all of a sudden, too, just after I left Scar at the livery stable and headed up the main street toward Doc Early's office. Real cloudburst. The wind was from the north and strong enough so that the water was beating against the building slant-wise. And the way the wheel ruts in the street were turning into puddles. Oop. The rain barrels were sloshing over the sides. Well, it was like the whole town had been pushed under a leaky sieve. The closest cover I could spot was the front porch of the Jackson Hotel. That's better. For a minute, I sort of shook myself off like a half-drowned pup. Then I noticed the young fellow standing beside me. I didn't recognize him, though, not at first.
Mr. Ponsett?
Hmm? You are Britt Ponsett, ain't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I wasn't sure till I saw your gun. I guess you don't remember me, Mr. Ponsett. Calvin Plummer.
Calvin Plummer? Oh. Oh, I sure remember you, Cal. Say, you really sprung up, haven't you? Why, by George, you're taller than I am. How'd you manage to do so much growing so fast?
Oh, I wasn't so fast, Mr. Ponsett. Been 6 years since you were in Petersville.
6 years? Is that long?
Right after my 15th birthday, that's when you left.
6 years since I was here, huh? Let's see, that must make you right about 21 years old, huh?
Yes, sir.
Ah, 21. Yeah, that's a man's age.
It's supposed to be. Too bad everybody doesn't realize it.
Well, sometimes it takes a while for people to get used to the fact that you've grown up.
I guess so.
How are your folks?
Hmm?
Your Ma and Pa, how are they?
Didn't you know, Mr. Ponsett? Pa died last summer.
Oh, well, no, I hadn't heard that. I'm sorry, Cal. I'm awful sorry about that. He was a fine man.
Yeah. At least I thought so.
Well, everybody thought so. You know that.
Did they?
What do you mean, Cal?
Nothing. Looks like it's letting up. You staying in town, Mr. Ponsett?
No, just overnight. I kind of twisted my hand while I was branding a calf the other day. And swelling wouldn't go down, so I thought maybe Doc Early ought to have a look at it. If he's still practicing here, is he?
Yeah, he's still here. I expect you've been moving around quite a bit, huh, Mr. Ponce?
Oh, more than my share, I guess.
You ain't never been to a place called Elk Point, have you? Somewhere out in the New Mexico Territory?
Oh, yes. I was out there in Elk Point 2 winters ago, I think it was.
What kind of setup is a Quincy ranch? Would you mind telling me?
Quincy?
Yeah, it's supposed to be one of the biggest outfits in those parts.
You sure it's near Elk Point?
Well, ain't it?
I don't know. Oh, no, I never heard of a Quincy ranch around there.
You certain, Mr. Ponce?
Yeah, of course, that doesn't mean that there isn't a...
Yeah, I know. Well, goodbye.
Say hello to your ma for me, Cal. She's all right, I trust.
Sure, she's fine.
I reckon your father was... Well, it must have hit her pretty hard, huh?
He had a real fast recovery.
What?
10 months ain't very long to mourn, is it? Not even a year. Just 10 months. Bye, Mr. Ponce.
Well, Cal Plummer had done a lot more than just grow up since the last time I saw him. Strange way he was carrying on. I sure couldn't figure out what caused it. And I talk about his mother, like... Cora and Ned Plummer were just about as well suited as any two people I ever met up with. But you couldn't even think about one without thinking of the other. They must have been married on close to 35 years. Cal, he was their third child. He was the only one that lived. Ned sure thought the world of him. Petersville wouldn't be the same without Ned. Rain had stopped now. It even started to warm up a little, and the mud puddles out in the street were giving off little whiffs of steam. So I went over to Doc Early's office. It was just around the corner from the hotel.
Britt, don't look like you broke a thing, but it's a real bad sprain. It's one you was even able to ride into town today.
Yeah, well, it wasn't any too comfortable, I'll tell you that much.
What you been doing for it?
Well, it wasn't much good to Doc, out at the ranch, you know.
Yeah, well, some hot water and Epsom salts might be a little help. I'll put the kettle on and get it warming. It was so darn chilly during all that rain, I built me a little fire in the stove. Good thing that ain't your shooting hand, Britt.
Well, I haven't needed a shooting hand much lately.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
No, things look quiet enough around Petersville.
Yeah, they're quiet all right, considering that Sheriff Jay is out of town.
Oh?
Yeah, he had some business, took him over to the New Mexico Territory. He's checking up on some fella there.
Oh. Well, that's kind of a coincidence.
What do you mean?
Well, I just ran into Cal Plummer on the way up to see you, and he was asking me about New Mexico.
That wasn't no coincidence, Britt.
What?
You see, the reason the sheriff went to Roswell
Well, of course, officially, he's picking up a prisoner. But the reason he went himself instead of sending somebody else is so he can do a little inquiring about Cal's new paw.
New paw?
Well, sure. Cora's married again. Didn't Cal tell you?
No, he didn't.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe he was just too ashamed to mention it.
Why, that doesn't seem possible. Cora Plummer remarried.
No, we was all mighty surprised. Nobody ever figured she'd look at another man, much less take a new husband. Especially so soon after. Well, it was less than a year. Oliver Quincy, that's the fellow's name.
Quincy, huh? Well, when did it happen, Doc?
Oh, we'll see. About a month ago. Maybe 5 weeks. 5 weeks and 3 days. And it's as plain as day he married her because she's got a little money. Ned left her a pretty well fish, ranch, and all in cattle.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about Cal?
Oh, he came in some money, too. Enough for a good start in life. And Cal's a hard worker. He'll get along. I feel kind of sorry for him, though. You know, he just worshipped his pa. And Cora getting hitched again, well, it was sort of like a slap in the face to him.
Yeah.
Sounds like that water's boiling. Yeah, that ought to be hot enough for you.
So what kind of a man is this Oliver Quincy? Is that his name,
yeah,
Oliver?
Yeah, that's his name, all right. Oh, you know the type, Brit. Big fella, white hair, mustache, always smiling. Here we are. A real four-flusher, that's what he is. You can spot him a mile off. Dresses like a dude, use a lot of fancy words. Move that stuff. Now, just let me... Now, just stick your hand in here.
Right here.
Ow! All the way, Britt, all the way. Heat's good for spring.
Smokes, that's hotter than a furnace, Doc.
Well, that's what draws out poison. You'll get used to it in a minute or so.
It draws out the what?
He claims that big ranch somewhere near Elk Point. Cora says he's worth more than she is. Well, maybe he's got her convinced, but he ain't fooling nobody else.
It could be the truth.
If he's so well off, why are they living on Cora's property? Just answer me that thing.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Guess that water's cooling off. Maybe I ought to pour in some fresh.
No. That water's fine, Doc. That's just fine. It doesn't need to be a bit hotter. It was just... And the hand's feeling better already.
Yeah, well, you leave it in a little while longer anyhow.
Well, it's feeling better.
I reckon even Cora will get her eyes opened up when Sheriff Jay comes back from New Mexico. He'll have the truth about Oliver Quincy. Of course, it's going to hurt her some. A woman don't like the idea of finding out she's made a fool of herself. But it'll be better for her to find it out now than later.
Well, I just don't see how this concerns the sheriff, Doc.
Man who tells a widow woman a batch of lies and finagles around so as he can get control of her property, that concerns the sheriff, don't it? Fellow who knew that, he might do a lot worse, Britt. He might do a whole lot worse. You just mark my word. All right, let's have a look at that hand of yours.
Oh, sure, I have. What?
Now, don't let the redness worry you. You ain't scalded. Swelling has gone down a mite. Well, I'll just wrap it up real tight, and in a day or so, it'll be good as new. Swear I don't know how I'd get along without Epsom salt. Seems like they're a remedy for almost everything. Put old Lady Murdoch on them last year when her liver was acting up. 4 or 5 doses, and she ain't had a bit of trouble since. Why, she was even at the barn dance last Saturday carrying on like she didn't have no liver at all. Now, if you'll just hold out your hand, Brad.
After Doc Early got through with his bandaging, my hand did feel a little better. At least some of the throbbing seemed to go away. So I left his office and I wandered over to the hotel. By the time I got there, they were serving supper in the dining room. Not family style either. They had a real fancy layout. You know, separate tables with flowers on them. 2 waitresses wearing little checkered aprons sort of matched the tablecloths. Of course, when a place is all fixed up like that, they always make it up on you, you know. You can figure on paying a little extra for your food when they have a place. Now, for instance, the steak I ordered, it was going to cost 35 cents. That's what it said on the menu, 35 cents.
There you are, mister.
Well, thanks.
Looks like you're going to have trouble cutting it. What's wrong with your hand?
It's nothing serious. It's just a sprain. I guess maybe I should have ordered something I could spoon through.
Want me to slice up the meat for you?
No, I'll manage. I just get this thumb out of here. I'll be all right.
Well, if you want anything, just holler.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Beth. I don't know why they give me the toughest steak in the whole kitchen. I for 35 cents. You think you should have
been... Howdy, Britt.
Oh, hello, Doc. Were you eating here too tonight?
No, Britt, I was looking for you.
For me? Huh.
Cal Plummer just come riding into town, says his ma's been shot.
Been shot? Car?
That's what Cal says. He don't think it's too serious, but I'm going out the ranch now to see what I can do for her.
Oh, of course, sure. Yeah.
Cal told me to bring you along.
Me? What for?
I don't know. He just told me to find you for good and bring you.
You did, huh? That's funny.
Well, Britt, you coming or not?
Well, I sure don't see where I figure in this thing, but if Cal wants me, I...
Sorry to drag you away from your supper.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right, Doc. I'm afraid I was fighting a losing battle with that steak anyhow.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Now, Act 2 of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponson.
The Plummer Ranch was about half our ride east of Petersville. Real big outfit, too. Maybe, 50 square miles grazing land and all. The main ranch house just off the road was built to size. Two stories tall with giant big windows facing out. I remember hearing folks tell how Ned Plummer had to send all the way up to Chicago to get glass big enough for those windows. There was a couple of lamps burning somewhere on the first floor. You could see the little lights spilling through the draperies. And the rest of the place was dark. Oh, boy. And we left our horses in the yard, Doc and I. And he grabbed his satchel with the medical instruments, and we walked up to the carved mahogany door, the front door.
Just a minute. Yes, sir. Oh, Doc Early.
Evening.
Just what can I do for you, Doctor?
Well, Cal said that Ms. Plummer... that Ms. Quincy, your wife, that she was hurt somehow.
Oh, I see. Well, it's nothing serious, just a scratch. My gun went off accidentally. A bullet grazed her shoulder. But Cora's perfectly all right now. Matter of fact, I think she's already gone to bed.
Is it Oliver?
Sounds to me like she's still up.
Well, I guess I was mistaken.
Yeah.
It's a doctor, dear, and,
My name's Ponsett. Britt Ponsett.
Britt Ponsett?
That's right. That's right, Mr. Quincy.
Well, I suppose you might as well come in, Doctor. Mr. Ponsett?
How you?
This way. I told him it was only a scratch, dear, but as long as Dr. Early rode way out here, I suppose he might as well have a look at you, just to be on the safe side.
Hello, Cora.
Britt. Why, what are you doing in Petersville? When did he get into town?
This afternoon. Didn't Cal tell you?
Well, no.
It must have slipped his mind.
Good evening, Cora. Let me see here.
Now, Doc, you shouldn't be troubling over me. I'm all right.
Excuse me. We're experiencing some technical difficulties here with CD Player 2. You can go ahead and listen to Second movement of Bach's Harpsichord Concerto in F minor, while I try and remedy this.
Big enough for those windows. There was a couple of lamps burning somewhere on the first floor. You could see the little lights spilling through the draperies. And the rest of the place was dark. Oh, boy. And we left our horses in the yard, Doc and I. And he grabbed his satchel with the medical instruments, and we walked up to the carved mahogany door, the front door.
Just a minute. Yes? Doc Early.
Evening.
Just what can I do for you, Doctor?
Well, Cal said that Ms. Plummer, that Ms. Quincy, your wife, that she was hurt somehow.
Oh, I see. Well, it's nothing serious, just a scratch. My gun went off accidentally. A bullet grazed her shoulder. But Cora's perfectly all right now. Matter of fact, I think she's already gone to bed.
Is it, Oliver?
Sounds to me like she's still up.
Well, I guess I was mistaken.
Yeah.
Oliver?
It's a doctor, dear, and...
My name's Ponsett. Britt Ponsett.
Britt Ponsett?
That's right, Mr. Quincy.
Well, I suppose you might as well come in, Doctor. Mr. Ponsett?
How are you?
This way. I told him it was only a scratch, dear, but as long as Dr. Early rode way out here, I suppose he might as well have a look at you, just to be on the safe side.
Hello, Cora.
Britt. Why, what are you doing in Petersville? When did you get into town?
This afternoon. Didn't Cal tell you?
Well, no.
It must have slipped his mind.
Good evening, Cora. Let me see here.
Now, Doc, you shouldn't be troubling over me. I'm all right, really.
Well, of course you are, my dear. Of course you are. Bullet barely grazed his skin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid the good doctor doesn't approve of my bandage.
No. It's perfectly satisfactory. At least it appears to be. I'd like to take it off, though, make certain there's no danger of infection. You mind stepping in the other room, Cora?
Well,
Go ahead, my dear. Go ahead.
I'll see you before you leave, Britt.
Oh, sure. I'll wait around till the doc finishes up.
Nice of you to ride out to Dr. Early, Mr. Ponsett. I imagine he appreciates having the company.
Well, it wasn't his idea, Mr. Quincy.
Oh?
Cal asked him to bring me along.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, I reckon that makes us even. Whereabouts is he, anyway?
Calvin? I don't know. He hasn't been here all evening.
He wasn't around when the shooting took place.
It was not a shooting, Mr. Ponsett. It was an accident.
Well, whatever it was.
And Calvin was not here. I met up with him while I was riding into town to get the doctor, and he offered to save me the trip.
I guess I was under the impression you said... Cora didn't need a doctor.
No, she does. But at first, I didn't know how serious the wound might be. Then, when I got back to the house, I saw it didn't amount to anything.
Uh-huh.
And by the time you and Dr. Early showed up, I'd forgotten the whole thing. That's why I was surprised to see you. For a moment, I couldn't think what you wanted.
Your gun just happened to go off, huh?
I was going to clean it. I thought it was empty. I guess I don't know too much about firearms.
What make do you carry?
Why...
He doesn't carry any make, but I do.
I hadn't seen Cal come into the front hall, so I didn't know how long he'd been standing there. He was holding a .45, using it to cover his stepfather. The gun wasn't moving either. Cal's hand was as steady as his eyes. Steady and cold and determined. Wasn't the first time I'd seen a man with a look like that on his face. Now, not a killer's look exactly, at least not the look of somebody who wants to kill. More like somebody who hasn't got any choice.
I was wondering how you'd lie out of it, Quincy. The kind of story you'd tell. You weren't very convincing either, considering all the practice you've had.
Hey, Calvin, listen to me. I know how you feel.
You haven't got the slightest notion how I feel. You did, you'd have left town like I told you a couple of hours ago.
Now, take it easy, Cal.
I gave him warning, Britt. I gave him fair warning. I said I'd kill him if he didn't get out and stay out for good.
I don't know what it is he's got against me, Mr. Ponsett. I suppose I don't measure up to his
measure
father.
Measure up to him? I ought to kill you for even comparing yourself. Well, are you going or not, Quincy? Because if you're not, this time Ma ain't here to get in the way.
Was that what happened before? Is that how she got shot up?
It was his fault. He's got her so mixed up, she doesn't see anything straight. She thinks he's fond of her, the way she is of him. When she saw the gun, she ran forward, yelling and screaming. The way she grabbed my hand, that's what made it go off. I never meant to fire. Least of all, I never meant to hit Ma.
But your Ma's all right, Calvin. The bullet hardly touched her.
I don't believe... Is that true, Mr. Punk?
That's right, Cal. Car's fine. Doc Early's in there now, just making certain.
All right, Quincy. Start moving before she comes back.
Now, hold on. Hold on a minute here, now. This isn't any way to settle things. He's your mother's husband. She's got a right to know what's going on.
You think I want her to know what a liar he is? That he never cared for you? You think I want to break her heart?
Well, what are you talking about, Calvin? I never lied to Cora. Never in my life.
And where's that big ranch you're supposed to own and all the money you're supposed to have?
What?
Tell Mr. Ponsett about your holdings. He's been to Elk Point. And there ain't no Quincy Ranch.
Oh, you're not making any sense, Calvin.
I ain't going to stand around here arguing.
Put that away, Cal.
Not until he leaves. He gives me his word he won't be back. And if he don't keep his word...
Cal?
You don't figure in this, Mr. Ponsett.
You got me out here. It was my idea.
Well, nobody's keeping you.
This bandage isn't on my gun hand, Cal.
He's got you fooled into being on his side, too.
I didn't say that.
Look. Ain't there nobody that sees him for what he really is? All he's trying to do is to get his hands on what my father left. Dad worked hard. All his life he worked hard. And when he was dying, he told me to look after Ma. Told me it was my job. Well, I'm going to do my job, Mr. Ponsett. And nobody...
Calvin, you made enough trouble for one night.
I'm sorry, Ma. Didn't want you to be here. Didn't want you to find out.
Found out what? My son turned into a lunatic?
I'm only doing it for you, Ma.
For me? Do you think you're helping me by carrying on like this? I've got my own life to live, Calvin. You've got to let me live it as I see best.
Ma, he's no good. I was trying to get him to leave before Sheriff Jay comes back from Roswell, before the whole thing came out. Well, I guess it's too late now. I guess you'll have to know.
Know what?
He hasn't got a ranch. He ain't got any money.
Oh.
If you don't believe me, ask Britt Ponsett. He only married you because of what Pa left you.
No, all I said that I didn't know of any Quincy Ranch near Elk Point. That's all I said. I haven't been around there for a couple of years. Maybe by now.
Well, there ain't no such ranch now either. Is there, Quincy?
Well, no, of course not.
There you see, Ma.
Calvin, listen to me.
He's admitting it, Ma. Why don't you face facts? Everybody else has been on to him. Everybody but you.
It's all my fault. I should have told you in the first place. I know that Oliver isn't rich. I never thought he was.
You